Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Conversations. I'm Oscar Crawford. Rebecca Bennett. Today our conversation is going to focus on what is next for women in the United States. Over the past 2 weeks, we've seen a huge number of women gather across the country, and particularly in D.C., expressing things that are of concern to women the day after the inauguration of President Trump. And 1 week later, another group of women, not as large, began to gather in D.C. as well to speak to the issues of the pro-life movement, and we're going to be talking about those today. Rebecca, are you with me?
I am with you.
I am.
Can
so
you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Good. Are you ready to
Wonderful.
Do this?
I am ready to do this.
Okay, well, I was just telling everybody that we're looking at today what is next for women in the U.S., and I made reference to the gathering that followed the inauguration of President Trump, and a week later's gathering, not as large in numbers, of the pro-life movement. That group of women were in D.C. too. And so you and I are going to have the conversation today with others listening in. What is next for women? What are women expressing that women want? Is there one clear voice? Are there many voices? What's going on? Talk to me.
I think that collectively there are many voices. I don't know that as a woman I can truly be lobbed into any box if you are a empowered woman, because I think you realize the versatility of what being a woman brings to the table. So I think that's ever changing and evolving in a constant scenario, which is a little bit hard to put in a box. To have any one demographic represented. However, I do feel that whether it's woman or whatever the issue is, there has to be that yin-yang. I think you have to become comfortable with the fact that what I may spend a lifetime representing and screaming to the top of my lungs about, I also equally have to and be aware of that somebody else has the right to do the polar opposite. And I think that is where, when you come to that point of being empowered, that point of enlightenment, I think, is where you get true change.
Okay. So one of the things that I think I've observed, particularly from the first demonstration that was nationwide and literally worldwide, that same kind of demonstration took place in some other country and major cities as well. I think women have said that, look, we are here. We're saying that as individuals and as a group. We are here. Take notice of us. We are no longer going to be asking for permission to come to the table. You all seem to have forgotten by tradition we set the table. So let's generate a new conversation. How do you feel that?
I believe we do set the table, and I believe the old saying, it's kind of cliche, is that behind every great man is a very strong, wonderful woman, and I think that's very true, even in the business world, because you have to have that combination of tone. You have to have the tactical, more brash, quote-unquote, ideal of a man, as well as that softer side of customer service and people-oriented skill that most women bring to the table well. So I think you have to find a way to gain that balance between the two and not separate them as in, I do a better job because I'm a man and you do a lesser job because you're a woman. I think we each have our equality in those realms, and I think it's about getting people to understand bring something very, very valuable to the table, and it doesn't have to be measured by the fact of our gender.
Okay.
So I fight this daily. So for everybody out there, I am in the business world, and I deal with this daily. So.
Well, and I'm a man who's black for 60-plus years, so I know the game in a different perspective, but it all really does boil down to the same issue. It's an issue of power, and who's going to have it, who's going to control it, who's going to maintain it. And one of the things that I've noticed over the years is that people standing on the outside of power have to continually knock on the door, even if it comes to knocking the door down. I'm not talking about a ceiling at this point. I'm talking about getting in. So if we're going to knock on the door, we don't knock and go away and say, oh, didn't they let me in? You've got to keep knocking. You've got to keep presenting. You've got to keep presenting someone with something to offer, whatever we are, to the point we have credible presence, because if that doesn't work, then we have to organize our own system that competes with the one we want to have access to. And I think that's a forever evolving piece of art. Talk to me.
Yes, it is, very much so. But I think in doing that is oftentimes we're so have it poured into us that you can do anything you want to. And I think sometimes our very nature ties us or draws us towards something that maybe we're not well suited for. I know I have stood at many a doors and banged on them profusely to be let in, only to be let in and realize that it was probably a good thing they didn't open the door, you know, sooner than they did, because I found out it wasn't something that I really, really wanted. So I think, again, we have to take that inner stock and go, what am I really good at? What, you know, what is it that I really want to do? What do I really want to accomplish? And then truly seek something that lines up more with that of who we are, because then you'll be your best version of yourself in your work and professional scenario.
I got that. One of the things that Bonnie and I have done over the years with people when we train them in groups is we would have a number of people to form a circle and then link their arms and squeeze in as tight as they could, because we wanted that to represent a closed system. And then we would say to a person standing on the outside of that, do whatever you have to do to get in, because however you get in, you get the rights and benefits and privileges of everybody who's already in the circle. So however you can break in, break in. Now, the job of the circle was to keep that newcomer out. And so the person trying to break in is always looking for the nicest one or the weakest one or the one that a deal can be made with. And those are all strategies that all people who are locked outside of something that they want always have to engage. I think that's whether we're male, female, black, white, LGBT, all of us who find ourselves on the outside and wanting something on the inside, we have to figure out a way to keep at it until we get in. But you're right. You have to decide then, oh, was this a mistake or not? Did I really want to be in, or was that just an idea I had to get through to know what I really want next?
Exactly.
So what do we
sometimes
think?
Sometimes it's not well suited for us. I think sometimes we see it as we want maybe that prestige, or we want – there's a certain essence of what we hope to gain once we get in the circle. But I think also you have to go, okay, once you're in the circle, you realize what they demand of you in order to receive that small benefit. And for me, I've had to go, is what I thought I was going to receive or what I wanted to receive tangible enough to put up with the crap that also goes along with some of that? And I just literally had to walk away from some of that. Too much stress, too much negativity, realizing that it wasn't the best fit for me. It wasn't going to make me become the best version of myself, other than to have made that realization and thank it for what it did and walk away.
Okay, so here's another thing that I want us to take a minute to talk about. It's very clear that no one group of women speaks for all women. I don't know that that's ever going to happen, unless women can arbitrate and discuss and negotiate and fight for a point of view to come to that common ground where all women have the same feeling. And I think that exists. It just exists in such a way it doesn't seem to be mainstream politically, but if women can get on the same page with this one issue, I think it would start to turn the tide in terms of the way women get access to the primary political conversation. And I think that is the way women respond to sexual violence. It doesn't matter whether you're pro-life or pro-choice. That issue is the same. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, what ethnic group you're part of, that issue is the same. But women don't take that issue to the forefront and demand it be attended as well as some other issues. What do you think about that?
We don't, and I think it's because there's a certain element where we fight ourselves. Instead of looking at another woman and saying, that is my sister, that she's part of my womanhood, because we are women, we tend to look at that person and go, oh, yeah, I don't like her. And women are the most catty, can be mean and vile group of people. When we don't like somebody, when we decide we're going lash out and be negative to somebody, we can be pretty detrimental. So I think we need to learn to just, you know, there's a lot of people that I run into that I don't like. And, I have to say, to each his own. If blue hair or whatever works for them, I couldn't walk into the business world and look like that. But it doesn't mean that they're a bad person because that's what they chose to do with their appearance or whatever. You know, however we're, you decide to judge whoever it is that you decide you don't like. She's still a woman, and she's still somebody that I need to find some element of respect for. And I think once we can lift each other up, even in our differences, we will become a very strong, unified force to be reckoned with. But we're not there yet. We would rather fight within ourselves than we would accept the fact that we are a nucleus that has set the table.
Well, here again, I think that bears out what history tells us. History tells us that people in power, and I know there's a traditional image for that, but I don't want to deal with that part of it today, but there's a traditional image of power that seems to have benefited from always keeping the new ones who want in at each other, so therefore you get to just disregard them because they can't get serious and get on the same page. What do you think of that?
Oh, yeah, it happens oftentimes. I have been said woman on both sides. I have been said woman going, yeah, doesn't matter what they do. I don't care how shiny they come at me, not getting in. But I've been said shiny woman that's done everything, you jumped through every hoop, whatever, struggled, done the fight, and not gotten in. So, I mean, I've been on both spectrums of it. And, again, I think it just comes back to the whole we don't accept each other as women. And there's that constant cat fight. You can divide a group of women as fast as you can bring them together. So until there's
okay,
that resolve within who we are, I don't know that you'll see us become a power group.
Well, listen, I know you've been talking to women in your travels around your state and other places you go. Tell us about the voices that you are hearing. What are women saying to you?
It's funny because I have asked an underlying single question to a little over 600 women now. And the responses have become almost laughable. And I just go, okay. Question has been, when you saw what and how we as women were represented between the first march and the second march, how did that hit you? What was your feeling? What was your emotion? Did you side with it? Did you not like it? Whatever. I just want to know, you know, tell me your take. And basically the underlying has been, A, Madonna doesn't represent me and never has, never will. B, I felt embarrassed. And C, if you don't gain or jump on that bandwagon, you're a bad woman. So those basically have been the genre of the, I mean, if I could categorize all 600 answers, somewhere it would lob in one of the three.
What'd you take away from that, though? What'd you take away from it?
I think, again, it has been what I have said kind of all through the show this time is that I think it showed the fractions of who we are as a demographic. As a group of women, we are fractured. We are not
okay
together.
Well, I think that when we look at the administration in office now, what do you think women will likely gain over the next 4 years?
That's a hard question because, until we're a little more, I'm a little bit different in some of those aspects, and I'll say this kind of telling a little bit about myself. Having gone through a violent scenario with a crime in my life very young, I have a different take on what pro-life, pro-choice represents. And so for me, whole issue has been settled. Why there's still that huge fight, I see both sides of the issue. I've argued and debated both sides of the issue. And all I can say is having been raped, having had several pregnancies in my life, none of which I aborted, however, had opportunity to, you know, in the scenario of it. And I feel like for me, the issue of pro-choice, pro-life comes to where's your real choice? If you have a choice to or not to have sex, there is your choice. If you get pregnant, even currently under what we have as Roe v. Wade, you have until a certain amount of time to not want that pregnancy and to legally be able to do something about it. Long term, in your 7th, 8th, 9th month, do I believe that that's murder? Personally, I do. Most women don't agree with me, and that's okay. That's just how I see it. I feel like there's choice. Having been a woman who had choice taken away from me, I honestly still believe the side of that is once you're raped, I mean, that happened in, I mean, you have moments after that, and there are pills, there's the morning after, there are things that you can do immediately if you don't want to go through what is a pregnancy from somebody who raped you. And nobody has to know about it. You can take a pill and in 3 days be back good. So I don't know that really the fight that's out there, I mean, I think we continue to feed the fight by the amount of negativity that we throw at it, which again is where I think we're fractured with most issues.
Okay, so here are two things that I always feel about this question. One is, it's not a political or legal question. That's settled. I mean, that is settled until the Supreme Court would do something else. When it gets into my personal life and I'm compelled to share a view, there are these things that I have to say. One is, for all the women who purport they are pro-life, and we're really talking Christians as the predominant force in the pro-life movement, not limited to, but the predominant force in the pro-life movement. Take those women out of the abortion clinic, and many clinics would close. So on one hand, it's an issue amongst the women that even though politically supposedly settled as something that can be protested against, many Christian women involve themselves in abortion. The second thing that is very real to me is I've thought about this over the years. And Bonnie, I've talked about this forever. The thing that challenges me most about the process is that this is the only event that takes place inside political America where one individual, in my view, has the right to choose what affects three. And inherently more than that, as families are extended. But the law says a woman has the right to make that choice. I'm not going to argue the law because I don't have privilege to argue the law. I just share point of view. If I was involved with a woman who was pregnant once that we had thought we were going to get married and live happily ever after, blah, blah, blah. And when she discovered she was pregnant, she wanted an abortion. And so because I was involved from the beginning, I went with her, shared the cost, didn't leave her hanging out to dry, didn't disrespect her. But when we went to that clinic in Detroit, Michigan, went to the clinic in Detroit, after the procedure was over, the doctor had the need to come out and tell me that a son was what had been aborted. I didn't need to know that. And after getting married years later and having only daughters, you know, I think about that. Now, those are all my ways of processing that, and I know that every individual who engages this experience has to process it. So for me, it's really quite simple. Christian women lie. They get abortions and just, you know, justify it in however they want to. And for me, on the other, it's a political issue where one individual, the woman, gets to make a choice that affects the lives of the child being carried and the man who produced it. And I'm not even getting into the whether the man was worthy or not. That's a whole other ballgame. But that's just Oscar's view on that. Talk to me.
I agree 100%. I mean, I'm right there with you. I don't know that I, and I know this sounds bad, I've had people respond very negatively to me for this, but I don't know truly that it is my right because the DNA that grows within me in the pregnancy is not solely represented just as me. So I mean, you and I definitely agree, and I think we're a strong united front when it comes to that. Plus, I personally believe your choice starts, again, having been raped, your choice starts much earlier in that process. Are you actively having sex? Is it unprotected? Are you not taking birth control? I mean, there's a whole host of choices, you know, that are going on. I have a peer that is kind of liberal that laughs, and we call it the him, her, or them conversation. So if you intend to have a one-night stand because your life is not set up to be able to have the relationship or whatnot, and that's what you so choose, like, do it smartly. Nobody has to know. It's not anybody's business. It's your own personal choice how you choose to have that sexual interface. However, if you wind up getting pregnant and you say it's not what you wanted, again, I think for me, when they split hairs, when you talk about what is choice, you made a choice before that. So being pregnant is more a consequence than it is something that you need a legal body to govern you for. So, I mean, I'm very staunch in that. I think your decisions have to be intentional. You have to know what it is you're doing. You know that to every action, there is a reaction. There's a result. It can be positive. It can be negative, but there's going to be a result. And I think you have to be able to handle both sides of whatever that result is based on your choice.
I'm with you. And here's the thing that I believe our species, our intelligent, intellectual, spiritually developed, civilized species, we're just sexually jacked up. You know, I could say that much cruder and effective point, but we're sexually jacked up. You know, we think we know what we're doing, but we're really poking around in the dark hoping to hit something that makes us happy. And in the consequence of doing that, we can do some really dumb stuff. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And here's the thing that I want every woman who may ever listen to this to understand. I have no value judgment on any woman who makes this choice. Baby, that is your free will privilege to make that choice. I fully accept that and understand that. And I also accept that there are a number of women in conditions that led to their becoming pregnant that was less than ideal. You know, from rape to poverty to power scenarios for which they had little choice over what happened to them. I acknowledge all that. And so one of the things that I look back, I mean, we're doing Black History Month right now, right? I look back at slavery and think about the number of slave couples that were in a cabin late at night when they got a knock at the door, and it was the master of the plantation wanting to do visitation, right? And that's hard for me to deal with, but that's been very real in our culture and in our nation. So we have all that to get through, and we're not through it yet because we avoid the discussion. Maybe we can prompt a discussion for that at some point.
Exactly. Oh, I agree 100%. People are, we as a society have chosen not to talk about sticky things only because I think, again, it's a fear-based decision. We're afraid that somebody won't like us. We're afraid somebody's going to get angry. We're afraid it's going to cause confrontation. And unfortunately, that's just a part of humanity that most people walk away from, would rather not deal with. So, again, take you back to one of our segues from our last show, don't make fear-based decisions and don't take no for an answer. Two principles I live by.
Okay, let's hit this one question before we go because we got 6 minutes left to go already. All right, I got a question from one person that talked about, I want to make sure and read this properly because I don't want to mess it up. But it has to do with correlating rape to border control. And the question was, why would a woman who has survived rape be opposed to border control because border control is crossing into an environment for which one has no consent if done illegally at a national level on Lady Liberty? How do you process that thought?
I think that's very profound, and I think there's a huge, again, having been raped very, very young, I think there's a huge element of truth and respect in the statement. If you choose not to come, if you choose not to come to a place, to a person, to an event, to an action with consent from both sides, essentially it is rape. So.
Agreed.
Take it or leave it. I definitely agree with the conversation. I think there's a whole host of truth in it that most people don't even want to see. And I've had people, when you talk about immigration or you talk about refugees, talk about people coming in from the borders, you know, we're all immigrants. I get it. I agree. We are all here. We raped the land and we raped the Native American Indians of what was home for them. And so, I mean, I have to agree. We did it. Was it right then? No. Do I believe it's right now? No.
Okay. Well, where you just took us, I'm fully with you again. because I even correlated to what we did at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You know, if we're going to run around acting like we're the bully to the world and to make everybody do what we want, nobody needs to be surprised when small groups of people come in and practice destructive violence on our culture, both foreign and domestic. I mean, there's no surprise to me when any of that ever happens, because we have run rampant on the world the last 100 years as if we're the world's boss. And there are a lot of nations now who are saying, F you. You are not our boss. You don't tell us when we can have a weapon. You really don't tell us anything. But then the whole system behind that is everybody wants American money, but everybody wants to tell America to go to hell. So there's got to be a way to bridge that gap. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. So I have a question that I'd love for people that listen to us to think about is, what are your thought processes on people who actually migrate here, get in, they do it legally, they're now here? And I especially reference Sharia law. What is your thought process into accepting, condoning them not wanting to change? I have a hard time. I struggle with that one myself. You came here to get away from a certain culture, a certain element of degrading behavior from the country, so you want it to be free. You came here where you're free. Now all of a sudden you want to flip the script and you want me to have to wear some nonsense on my head. You want me to kneel and pray towards the sun, and you want me to accept that violence is okay. So I have a hard time with some of that. You came here to be free. You truly came here to be a refugee to change. Enjoy the change you came to. Just my thought.
Okay, look, I'd love to know what
other people think of that.
Well, we'll publish that out to our social media sites and gather some information. But I certainly agree with you, and I agree with you to the extent that there's a whole question that goes on amongst Mormons in this context too. I have no notion that we're ever going to accept and grant free rights to practice Sharia law. That is antithetical to being American in every context possible. I want to leave us with this thing today, Rebecca, though, that always settles illegal immigration as it's identified like this. Nobody gets to come into my house without an invitation, right, or an agreement, have a bedroom, have a seat at the table, and access to the remote control, unless we grant it. You know what I'm saying? So when we boil down things to where they're personal, they become real. Nobody has the privilege to do that. And that's good at the local level. That's good at the national level. We've got 90 seconds left to go. Have your final comment.
I appreciate every last one of you that listened to us, and I hope you join us next week for some more issues. I'd love to hear comments and questions, so be sure to be calling in and submitting those for us.
And you can also follow both of us on Facebook. You can just enter the name Oscar Crawford or Oscar Crawford Media. You'll be able to get access to us there. You'll be able to get access to Rebecca Bennett on Facebook. You can also get access to us on Instagram. Follow us, like us, talk to us. You don't have to be on the same page as us. Really, if everybody's on the same page, some of us are unnecessary. So bring the things that challenge you. Bring the things that challenge your friends and your family. Let's talk. Maybe someone's voice will give answers to the things that trouble us. I hope you do join us again next week. Thank you for joining us. Rebecca, calling you in a minute.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?